Healy, superstar. Do you think you're what they say you are? Ricky Lee, superstar. Do you think you're what they say you are?
It's showtime with Ricky Lee. Thank you for joining me here on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. You can always stream our episodes on your phone or computer at huntleyradio.com. We talk a lot about the wonderful actors and actresses who bring characters to life on stage and in the movies. But someone has to write those brilliant words that they say. Enter the playwright, the job where theater really begins, taking an idea and giving it structure. Today, I am thrilled to be joined by award-winning playwright Diane Baya Hale. We'll be discussing her writing process as well as some of her superb plays, including The Marble Muse, which has gained multiple honors around the country. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ricky Lee. It's wonderful to be here.
Now, being a playwright is a very unique job and a very wonderful job, I would imagine. You know, it sounds so wonderful and fulfilling, but I think our listeners would really love to learn kind of about how you got involved in it and maybe a little bit about your process. So what sparked you into a career as a playwright?
Well, you know, I cannot remember a time that I did not want to be a writer. And yet I always thought that I would be writing novels. It was, you know, it sort of took me by surprise when I, you know, graduated college and was casting about for a story to tell and thought I found one and actually went off to Northern Ireland to research it. And it was there that the story told me that it didn't want to be a novel. It wanted to be a play.
Interesting.
It was just so immediate that it wanted to move. It wanted to have people talking instead of audiences reading. And so that's actually what launched me into my career as a playwright.
And what was your background with theater before? You had this vision that you were going to be a novelist, and then this project spoke to you as a play. What was your background with plays for it to speak to you that way?
You know, surprisingly little.
Wow.
I had a degree in English literature from the University of Denver. I had, of course, read dramas as part of my coursework, but I actually did not see my first professional play until I was in high school.
Wow.
And this was largely because my parents, although they adored opera, didn't really like the theater that much. In fact, I remember my father once telling me, the theater, it's also fake. And I thought, come on, Dad, what about opera? How fake is that, you know? So it was not until I had an opportunity to see, it was actually One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest at the Huntington Hartford Theater in Los Angeles, when I was in an organization in high school called the Mentally Gifted Minors. It was sponsored by the state of California, and it took students to multiple different experiences. And one of them was this play. I was floored. William Devane played McMurphy, and it was just, I thought, oh my gosh, I think this is something I might want to do someday.
So now years later, you have this idea for your first novel. You go to Ireland to research it, and it's the idea speaks to you as a play. So you begin your career as a playwright. What is the writing process?
The writing process was very difficult, but I seem to have a natural ear for dialogue, and the voices began talking to me, telling this story. And when I returned from Northern Ireland, I actually signed up for playwriting courses at UCLA's extension program, and took a number of playwriting courses there, then was invited to join a playwrights group in Los Angeles. From there, I finished the play and submitted it to an organization called First Stage. And it was, it had a reading, and then it went on to a workshop production. And then I was hooked. So
what are some of your favorite titles that you've written that you're proudest of? That maybe they're the ones that won the most awards, or maybe they're the ones that are the most meaningful for you. But what are the ones that speak the most for you?
Well, the latest one really does, The Marble Muse, but I'll also mention two others. One is called The Wisdom of Serpents, which, bizarrely enough, is set in the 12th century and is based upon the life of a really remarkable woman, St. Hildegard von Bingen, whose music continues to touch people today. I was drawn to her story the same way I was to the Northern Irish story, because there was an injustice done to her at the end of her life. And I love finding stories of injustice where people of conscience are forced to stand up and decide if they are going to be on the side of truth or on the side of evil. And I know that's, you know, not lighthearted entertainment, but it is the sort of thing that just really motivates me to write. I love it when I learn new things, when I'm exposed to new perspectives, when I can see how other people handled difficult topics. And that compels me to try to share my own take on the world.
Now, it seems you like to focus on real stories involving real people that you do research on, real events, and then dramatize it. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And what draws you to that? What draws you to that?
That sense of, well, there's nothing new under the sun. And as we go through our 21st century life, I find it so illuminating to know that others have confronted the same difficulties that we have. And I, honest to God, do believe that we can learn from the past. And of course, there's the favorite saying that those who do not learn from the past are doomed to repeat it. And we can see that happening constantly in our society. So I think we do need to hold up a mirror to distant times so that we won't make the same mistakes they do.
Now, that poses an interesting question. When you're dealing with showing a mirror for current happenings, but you're basing these plays in 12th century, 19th century, so forth. So when you write, do you write in period dialogue, or do you write in contemporary dialogue, or something kind of in between?
Something kind of in between.
Okay.
It Writing a 12th century dialogue could be a bit difficult,
right?
Not just for me, but for the actors, for the audiences. But you sort of strive for a cadence that can resonate and give a sense of the time, but also be absolutely clear to the spectators. I like to write my dialogue in iambic pentameter. Not obviously iambic pentameter, but I've just found from experience that it can make really difficult lines easier for the actor. I remember being in a rehearsal for one play and one of the actors just looking at the dialogue and after we finished the scene saying, "Oh my God, that was so much easier than I thought. What's the secret?" And the secret is really going with that rhythm that's part of our heartbeat, that ebb and flow of our pulse as we breathe in and breathe out.
Now, kind of related to that, you mentioned cadence. And, one of my favorite playwrights is Tennessee Williams. And he has a certain cadence he always has in every play. You recognize his work. Do you have a style that resonates in all your works, or do you kind of try and chameleon to the piece?
I try to chameleon a bit. There is another one of my favorite plays, a play called Rake, also based on a true story and set during World War II and inspired by the actual exploits of a British homosexual actor turned spy who spied for the British in Paris while masquerading as a woman.
Oh my lord, that's
how
complex.
Can you use this story like that? And of course, in his day and age, it was a crime to be gay in Britain. And he endured so much harassment from his own countrymen, but even so, he wanted to serve and did so with distinction. And so I changed the cadence for that play to reflect his Englishness, to reflect the fact he did actually fall in love with a German officer, which raised the stakes enormously.
Wow.
So there was also the German aspect.
You're listening to It's Showtime with Ricky Lee on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. If you are ever outside the broadcast area, remember you can stream current and past episodes by going to the It's Showtime with Ricky Lee page at huntleyradio.com. Today, I am talking with award-winning playwright Diane Baia Hale. Diane's play, The Marble Muse, is about 19th century American artist Louisa Lander and her disastrous relationship with Nathaniel Hawthorne. It has won numerous honors and has been presented across the country. In the next segment, we'll be discussing the play, The Marble Muse, its origins, and its future. So, Diane, let's talk about The Marble Muse. For those who do not know who the subject is, can you give a little bit of information about Louisa Lander?
Absolutely. Louisa Lander was one of our pioneering American female sculptors. She was born in 1826 and died in 1923. She was most active in the middle of the 1800s, in the 1850s. And unfortunately, her work has long been forgotten. She's not the only woman, female artist, to whom this has happened. But her situation was particularly scandalous because it involved American literary sensation Nathaniel Hawthorne, author of The Scarlet Letter.
Mm.
And Louisa was born in Salem, Massachusetts, as was Nathaniel Hawthorne, and as was also the villain of the story, another male sculptor by the name of William Wetmore. Story. They all had known each other in Salem, but the actual action of the play takes place in Rome, Italy, where Luisa had gone to learn how to sculpt at the feet of the masters. It was impossible for women back then to get an arts education in the United States. So really, any woman who desired to be an artist had to go abroad for training. Luisa did very well while she was over in Rome. And by the time that Nathaniel Hawthorne arrived in the city, he was on a grand vacation with his wife and family. She had achieved enough prestige that he agreed to sit for a bust of himself. It was during these sittings, which took place between February 1858 and April 1858, that a relationship sprang up between them. None of us knows what really happened, because at the end of her life, Luisa destroyed all of her correspondence. Much earlier, Nathaniel Hawthorne's wife destroyed any mention of Luisa Lander in her personal papers. It was a mystery. But not too long after the marble bust was completed, rumors began to circulate that Luisa had been behaving improperly with someone, that she had even gone so far as to pose in the nude for another artist. This at the time was scandalous beyond belief. And the upshot of it was that her career was ruined. And it was partially ruined because Nathaniel Hawthorne, believing that he was going to be judged, the man in question, absolutely refused to defend her, cut her, turned his back on her, the same way that his character, the Reverend Dimmesdale, did in The Scarlet Letter to Hester Prynne. She tried to vindicate herself by continuing to sculpt, but society had turned against her. The Roman male artistic community actually went so far as to convene a committee of inquiry into her character. She refused to speak before it because it was essentially a kangaroo court. And this male artist with whom she was supposedly involved was never identified. No evidence was ever put forward that any of the rumors were true. And thus she faded into obscurity. And it's a tragedy because she was a really good artist.
Now, all the vital potential source material was destroyed. You know, her papers, Nathaniel Hawthorne's wife's papers. What did you use as your basis for this story? That, I mean, it's won awards. It's obviously a wonderful, wonderful play. How did you create it?
Well, I also happen to be a Nathaniel Hawthorne scholar. And as I was reading various biographies about him, I started running across these footnotes in these biographies, just throwaway lines about something that had happened with a woman in Rome, a woman by the name of Luisa Lander. And so what I started to do was to just go through old records, old newspaper accounts to figure out who this woman was. And as technology increased and I began to be able to find more and more little clues about her, I was able to piece together a picture of what had happened, not from her own writing, but sort of working around it and burrowing inward and trying to trace what had happened to her art. And so it was like a detective story. And I felt that the story was particularly relevant to our society because of the Me Too movement. And I really felt that Luisa had been a a victim of what was essentially a 19th century version of a Me Too power struggle with these artists in Rome, male artists in Rome, just wanting to put this uppity woman in her place. And Nathaniel Hawthorne exercising his position as a powerful man, trying to take advantage of a much younger woman early in her career.
And so the play itself takes place in the between Louisa and Nathaniel Hawthorne in their sessions. Is that correct?
That is correct. It occurs during the sculpting of the bust that she made of him. The play also features Hawthorne's wife, Sophia, his eldest daughter, Una, the villain of the piece, the rival male sculptor, William Wetmore Story, and a fellow female sculptor, Harriet Hosmer, who's also a remarkable artist.
And so where kind of is the story now? I mean, it obviously, when did it premiere?
It actually had its first staged reading at Le Petit Marché in Crystal Lake.
Oh, my.
And it's since moved on to various venues. And what has happened now is that I've become so obsessed by Louisa and her story and the fact that, well, she just isn't letting go of me. And there's only so much that you can cram into 2 hours upon a stage that I've gone back to what I thought I was going to be, a novelist. And I am now finishing up my second draft of the novelized version of The Marble Muse, which takes us from Louisa's childhood in Salem all the way through the scandal in Rome.
So it covers the same territory, but more expansive. It includes what the play covers, but far more.
Far more. It includes her youth. I mean, because you have to wonder what inspired a little girl of her time to want to do something that was considered forbidden for women. And of all the fine arts, sculpting was considered the most masculine because it involved hammers and chisels and banging upon stone. A woman was encouraged to draw and sometimes even paint in an amateur way, but to be a sculptor, it just wasn't done, to use the jargon of the time. So I was also concerned with what made this woman want to take these enormous risks and fashion a career like that.
And now, I find it interesting. She's a sculptor, and these sessions, you know, took place when she was in the sculpting process. Does the actress playing Louisa actually do sculpting on stage? I mean, how does that work?
There is a little bit of it.
Yeah.
In the sculpting process, you start out with drawings. So at the beginning of the play, she is sketching Nathaniel Hawthorne. And then prior to working on a marble, she works in clay.
Okay.
So there is a little bit of clay work that occurs on the stage. And I was inspired to do this by a play that I remember from about 20, maybe 30 years ago called Painting Churches, where an artist is painting a portrait of her parents during the course of the play. So I thought, well, why not give sculpting a go? And I know it's messy, and I know it's difficult to deal with. But, you know, I thought it would be interesting for the audience to see it taking place. There was a play not too long ago, well, before COVID, at Timeline Theater in Chicago about Julia Child. And the actress portraying Julia was actually cooking in the theater.
Oh, wow.
And it was so difficult to concentrate on the words because the smells emanating from the stage were just delicious.
Wow, that's wonderful. Oh, wow.
So depicting a process has been done before, and I thought I would do it. She does not, however, sculpt the marble bust on stage because I thought that was asking a bit too much.
Yeah. Maybe for the film adaptation. So now what is, we're going to wrap up shortly, but what is the future for the play? I know you've on the second draft of the novel and we're looking mm-hmm. forward to seeing where that goes. What about the play? Are there any performances coming up? Or, I mean, this is it's an award-winning biting drama. If any theaters in the Chicagoland area might be interested in looking to produce it, you know, what kind of opportunities are out there right now?
Well, you know, COVID really just decimated the theater industry. And it's also become increasingly difficult to place a period play. It seems as if tastes have changed since the virus hit us. But I'm still hunting for opportunities where this play could be seen again now that it seems people are finally getting back into theater seats. And I have to admit, I have not been to the theater myself since COVID hit because I'm still a little scared. I know that it's hard for people to want to take the risk again.
Well, I hope that a theater does. I hope multiple theaters do because I want to see this. I want to see all the plays that we've talked about today because they sound absolutely wonderful. You have been listening to It's Showtime with Ricky Lee on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. Remember, you can stream shows from your mobile devices at huntleyradio.com. Today, I have had the great pleasure of talking shop with Chicago-based playwright Diane Baia-Hale. Be sure to keep your eyes peeled for opportunities to see Diane's award-winning play, The Marble Muse. Diane, I hope you will come back in the future and share some more of your success stories. It's been a wonderful time talking, and I can't wait to hear more about you.
Thanks so much, Ricky Lee. It was a real honor to be here. Thank you.